You get a job, your employer asks you to sign a contract, but do you really know what you're signing away? It might be more than you think. Take this story. In 2015, Jacob Lewis filed a class action lawsuit with a group of coworkers against their employer, Epic Systems. They said the company wasn't paying them the overtime they deserved. But Lewis and his coworkers had already signed a contract that forbade employees from joining class action lawsuits and required any suit to be settled by arbitration. Well, Jacob Lewis and his coworkers pushed ahead with their lawsuit anyway, and they won. But Epic Systems appealed all the way to the Supreme Court. On Monday morning, the Supreme Court agreed with Epic and decided that American workers who sign arbitration agreements cannot then band together to sue their employer. More than 60 million American workers are required to sign contracts like this as a condition of their employment, and some may not even realize it. So what does the Supreme Court ruling mean for them? We turn to Miriam Gillis. She's a professor specializing in class actions at the Benjamin Cardozo School of Law. Professor, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
So lots of questions about this. Let's do a brief lesson. What is a class action and what is arbitration? Can you explain the difference?
Sure. So a class action is a procedure, a legal procedure. It's provided for in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, and every state has a similar rule that allows one claimant, one plaintiff, to bring a lawsuit on behalf of other similarly situated, similarly wronged individuals. And the idea is that that's a pretty efficient way of dealing with a legal dispute. So, for example, if an employee determines that she has been systematically underpaid, right? So she's supposed to get paid for a certain amount of time and the employer's shaving time off of her check. She talks to a few other people and realizes, wow, this is not just me, this is everybody. She can go to a lawyer and say to the lawyer, I believe that there's a systematic illegality going on. And the employer can bring the claim in court under Rule 23 of the Rules of Federal Procedure, but the states, again, have similar rules and can represent all of these people in one claim, which means that when you're doing, when you're trying to figure out what the employer really did, it's only, you only have to do it once. You don't have to do it, a thousand times. When you're negotiating a settlement, you do it once for everyone. And because there's great power in the collective, because there's great power financially, you can get great legal help, and you can get big damages, sure, but you can also impose pretty serious remedies on the employer, a sort of thou shalt never again, right? We're all watching you. That's pretty serious power, right? And Ginsburg, in her dissent here, reminds us that that's what equals the playing field. Otherwise, employees left to their own devices will not bring claims because they can't afford to bring claims. They can't afford to get lawyers to bring those claims on their behalf. So then let's look at arbitration. Arbitration was, I think, originally intended to be a way of resolving disputes between parties of equal bargaining power, essentially having a private judge, maybe even someone with some expertise in the business's area, resolve disputes that arose between them. That makes a lot of sense, right? But these days, and basically ever since the 1990s, the Supreme Court has held that arbitration can be imposed via standard form contract in the agreements you and I sign, click, somehow agreed to all the time without even realizing we're doing so.
And you're talking specifically about, I want to make sure our listeners understand,
yes,
of course, when we all, you know, when all of us go to work at some point, we'll probably be asked to fill out a bunch of forms as part of our HR, you know, what they call onboarding or process. So in all that, you're saying that there could be some language that most employees are not aware that they're signing off on?
Yeah, studies show us that most employees are not aware, and yes, that language is there. In this case, for example, in Epic, the employer sent around an email, and the email included a lot of different things about your first day of work, about procedures and processes at work, and in there was an arbitration clause, and the language says you are deemed to agree to this the day you finish work, the first day you're at work. So it's a condition of employment. I mean, even if we did know about it, quite frankly, I'm not sure what we do, because if everybody has an arbitration clause and you must agree to it in order to be employed, how many of us have the option of saying, you know what, I'd rather not have that paycheck?
Right.
You know, especially when we're talking about something as intangible as dispute resolution, right? I realize, you know, I've been working on this for a decade and I know it's not the sexiest topic, but because nobody thinks at the beginning of any relationship that it's going to end up
in court, right?
Of course.
Whether it's an employment relationship or a marriage, right? We always assume things are going to last forever. But these are issues that arise in the beginning and end up, as we can see from the decision yesterday, really harming workers at the end.
We asked some of our listeners about their experiences with arbitration, and we got this message from an employer in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, who said, and I'm quoting, "Yes, I've dealt with arbitration on the employer side. It was a waste of time and paperwork. An employee who sued really didn't have just cause, just the trumped up, quote unquote, age discrimination charge. They got a minimum amount, $3,000, and the lawyers got $5,000. That was the message. Mm-hmm. How common is that perspective among employers? Like, this is just a waste of time and money and paperwork.
Well, I think that I'd love to talk to that employer and ask him what he thinks about any kind of dispute resolution, right? I mean, look, nobody wants to ever be called to the mat and told you did something wrong. And look, sometimes employees are going to do this, and it's the allegations are not just. That's what the legal system does a really good job at, of vetting claims at early stages. We have so many procedures in place for judges to decide whether there's any there. I don't know as much about arbitration because arbitration is secret. Its outcomes are not known to us. Researchers like me can't study arbitration outcomes. Everything is confidential. They don't have to rely on the rules of civil procedure, the rules of evidence. They don't even have to necessarily rely on precedent. Arbitrators can do whatever they'd like. And there are a lot of studies that show that arbitrators are basically handpicked by employers. So that's a surprising perspective. One wonders about the veracity of it.
Now, the question is also, we're talking about class actions, but what about individuals who want to sue their company for any of these perceived, whether it's pay or any other types of discrimination? Has anything changed for them?
No. I mean, we're talking about class actions because we worry that so many claims are too small to be brought on an individual basis and are therefore only valuable and worthwhile in a collective. But this affects individual claimants just as much. So if you have an individual claim and it's worthwhile for you to bring that dispute, you're going to arbitration, right? These are arbitration clauses with class action bans tucked in them. So they apply across the board.
So an individual essentially would be forced to take that claim and sit at the table mm-hmm. and get yep. a very big, fancy, expensive lawyer and, mm-hmm. and play this out. Okay. Let's take a listen. We also got another call from one of our listeners.
My name is Mike Morgan, and I'm from Rhode Island. My experience in arbitration has been positive and negative. I think it has its place, but there is also an inherent bias in the fact that the individual or the corporation who chooses the arbitrators has a conscious or unconscious bias to side with the corporation or person who hires the arbitrators.
Any final thoughts on that, Professor?
This has been well documented and it's pretty commonsensical if you think about it. These arbitrators, they make money. They make a salary because employers and other big companies hire them repeatedly to do these dispute resolution processes. If they don't find for their handlers some of the time, much of the time, I think they're out of a job. So there have been studies about arbitrators who find for consumers or employees too often being blackballed and not getting rehired. There are great studies showing that employers and big companies win the majority of the time. And even when the little guy does win, they win a lot less than they would in a court proceeding. So, this is pretty good evidence of bias. Again, it's hard to study arbitration because it's opaque to us, right? We don't get to see what's happening in arbitration. So that makes it difficult.
Miriam Gillis is a professor specializing in class actions at the Cardozo School of Law. Thanks so much, Professor, for being with us.
Thank you so much.